I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek, episode 107. I'm Scott Johnson, and we are mining the very depths of film entertainment. Nope, wrong one. We are. Sorry.
Point of order, Scott.
Point of order. It's the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All Stars, Geeks of the World, and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson, and he's Tom Merritt.
Are you sure? Are you reading the right script?
You know, I shouldn't prep for Film Sack right before we do this show. That shouldn't happen.
Believe me, I am not going to judge, even though I do have a gavel, because I certainly have done very similar things. But it's Current Geek, man. It's time to kick off the weekend in style.
Yeah, it's nice to see you, my friend. Are you
you got
any big plans for the weekend after all this? Anything good?
I'm going to see a play.
Oh, I am
about
too.
JFK, but in the style of Shakespeare.
Nice. I'm going to see a play of sorts. It's called, you may have heard of it, it's called a movie.
A moving picture.
It's a talkie, and it involves an oil rig that explodes with Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. So I'm going to go see that tonight. Looking forward to that. But before that, we've got a big full show, and we have two guests. Ladies and gentlemen, join me in welcoming to the show Carrie Sims, founder of Blazing Caribou Studios and one of the great hosts of Trivia Geeks. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. I feel like this is a long time overdue. We've meant to have you on for a while, so thank you for being on.
Oh, anytime. Not a problem.
Awesome.
We're going to have you guys back on, too, because we got some good stuff going on.
We will make it happen. I like some good trivia in my life, so and so will you during our pop quiz today. Trust me.
I'm very nervous about it, but yeah.
Says the host of Trivia Geeks. Come on.
I know. I mean, you know, it's a different kind of a show. It's a fun show. So, you know,
you
were on it. You guys
know how it goes. You have different scoring methods than we do. I remember.
I do understand that. Yep.
You mean theirs are fair and accurate is what you're saying, right? Is that what you mean, Tom?
Scott. Okay. Wrong.
All right, fine. Also with us, Amy Ratcliffe. You might know her name from being an entertainment journalist writing for, Nerdist.com and StarWars.com. Those are places I go all the time. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. How's your week been?
Oh, it's been, I don't know. How can I put it in words? It has been, let's say it's been accented by much World of Warcraft play. And that's
that sounds like an probably excellent week.
It's probably a bad thing in the long look of things, but I still had a good time, and that's all that matters. And that's what we're here to do today, is have a good time. Let's start with these headlines.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
All right, Tom, take it away.
Researchers at the University of Canterbury in Christchurch, New Zealand, have restored the first recording of computer-generated music as created by Christopher Strachey, not sure exactly, on a machine that is famously created by Alan Turing and team. The BBC made the recording on a 12-inch acetate disc at the Computing Machine Laboratory in Manchester, and it was a little warped, it was a little wobbly, so researchers tweaked the speed, compensated for the wobble, and are able to play it back the way it is closest to how that sounded. So now you can hear the very first computer-created music featuring snippets of God Save the King, that's how long ago it was, Ba Ba Black Sheep, and In the Mood, Glenn Miller.
I'm going to play a taste of it. Let's see if we can hear it here. It's very hard to hear. There we go. I'll skip ahead some. That won't let me. Wow. Tom, we've come a long way. I just want to say that.
It sounds like a band I was in eighth grade, I swear to God.
That's kind of cool, though.
It's very cool, but yeah, thank goodness we've made some advancements in that area.
Yeah, we've made real inroads. It does make you feel bad, though, when you complain about the quality of your earbuds or, you know, how crappy your speakers in your car might sound when you hear something like that. But I had no idea Alan Turing was famous, Tom, for anything other than the test he's famous for.
Yeah, obviously the Turing test, but also cracking the Enigma cryptography from Germany. That is what the entire movie about him is about. Mm-hmm. And this was something where I think people are rightly giving him credit for creating the machine it was run on. But Mr. Strachey is the one who actually did it. And apparently when he showed it to Turing, Turing was sort of nonplussed, as is kind of common for stories about touring. He said, good show.
Wow. So
understated. I like it.
Amy, if I were to ask you of all your work that you've done online or wherever, do you hope that there's a time in the future where somebody, for whatever reason, they go, you've got to read this thing that Amy wrote, Amy Radcliffe. She comes from the 21st century, everybody. And it's just amazing stuff. And they'll read off one of your articles. Do you feel like you've ever done something like that where if you were asked today, you'd be like, oh, I don't know, it's just an article. But sometime in the far flung future, your writings might be considered, I don't know, really important to somebody.
I don't think anybody far in the future is going to care about my opinions about Pondababa in Star Wars. So I don't have hopes for that. I haven't written that piece yet.
Amy, William Shakespeare said the same thing about his piece. This is a different topic, but relative. I think what I'm saying is you're the William Shakespeare of nerd journalism.
Oh, that was really nice. Sheesh.
Wow, that's very kind.
I always wonder if a podcast will make any difference that I recorded in that time. I think about there was some, you know, dude in a cave thousands of years ago who drew something and he didn't think that that would be some famous cave drawing now preserved for all time. So you never know.
The elk guy. Never appreciated in his own time. I just want to be one of those people who goes on record to say I was into the music of Computing Machine Laboratory before it got popular.
Oh, very nice. I always knew you were a hipster for Alan Turing machines.
Also going on record. Get it?
I get it. Yeah, it's good.
Hey,
good.
Stephen Hawking discusses his search for evidence of extraterrestrial life and why he is more convinced than ever that we are alone in the universe in a 25-minute film called Stephen Hawking's Favorite Places. Hawking takes viewers on a trip around the universe in a CGI spaceship, kind of stealing a little page from Neil deGrasse Tyson there. He also says if we ever do receive a signal from alien life, we should be wary of answering back, saying meeting an advanced civilization could be like Native Americans encountering Columbus, and that didn't turn out so well for the Native Americans.
Oh, too soon, too soon. So here's the thing I always think of when I hear about him, primarily him saying that we are alone in the universe, or we're not going to have contact from other beings. He's not necessarily saying other life, even sentient, even intelligent life, even more advanced life doesn't exist at all. What he's saying is that our chances of running into them or connecting with them or communicating with them are infinitesimal at best, right? Is that kind of the idea? Like he's just...
Yeah, I mean, I think he's saying it's a lot lower likelihood than we think because all of the planets we've been able to observe are pretty harsh environments. And then he says, and even if it's out there, it's really hard to communicate and cross distances.
Carrie, do you buy that? Do you think we're never going to hook up with alien types?
I don't know. It scares the living daylights out of me to even think that we would. Because if it turns back into like a situation with the Native Americans, I don't want to be the Native American side.
We don't want to be oppressed by some exploring jerks.
I mean, I'm a woman. I'm already been oppressed, so I don't need more of that, I guess, in my life. But God,
one more thing to deal with.
One more thing. I mean, I'm blonde. Yeah. You know, I own a business. I'm a woman. What else do you want? I'm just depression all over the place. So yeah, I don't know. It actually scares me. But I mean, I think it's actually probably plausible.
Yeah.
You know, within the next, I don't know, I want to say something like 1,000 years. There's my prediction for you guys. Okay. 1,000 years. Yeah.
I have a hard time agreeing with him, Amy, and just saying straight up, I don't think we're ever going to run into alien life. I, for whatever reason, maybe I've been conditioned to believe this, but I just feel like at some point we're going to have something, even if it's just like intercepting someone else's satellite or equivalent thereof. What's your take on it?
Well, I think we're in such an exploratory kind of mode right now as a human race with the progress we've made on Mars. And I think it's an arrogant belief to think we're completely alone. And since we're kind of advancing and slowly but surely getting better technology and finding all kinds of interesting information just on that one planet, I don't think it just doesn't even seem like a consideration that we won't come across some sort of life form.
Yeah, it seems like eventually, maybe not our lifetimes. Yeah, I was going to say our lifetimes are probably maybe not so much, but
yeah.
Tom, you're excited about getting on the USS Musk and flying to places unknown, right?
I really hope that's what they call it, because who wouldn't be proud to wear that right on their sleeve?
Yeah.
USS Musk. I I don't want to disagree with one of the smartest people ever to be in existence, but it does feel a little bit like those predictions that say, well, we'll never, that end up being overturned. And he may be right for a long, long time. And maybe that's his point, is it's so long that we'll probably wipe ourselves out, or we won't care about contacting other races in the universe at some point. But I do think that based on the technology we are capable of conceiving right now, it seems less likely than it used to, because we're starting to get a better realization of how many habitable planets there might be, how hard it would be to actually move through the vast distances of space, how hard it is to propel us at a certain level. But there's also things that we don't know we will discover, physical properties that we won't. We don't understand dark matter. We don't understand dark energy. And I think once we start to gain more physics understanding, that may open up more possibilities for us.
I entirely agree. I always think about human beings in a funny way. Like we're sure that we're going to run. We have this exploratory nature, and we're sure we're going to run into something. We're going to find something new. We're going to reach new lands, new places, new locales, and in this case, new stars, new planets. That's in our blood and in our evolutionary pattern to go, yes, we will find it. It's out there. We're going to get it. It may take 300 years. It may take 1,000, but we're going to get there. Yet, I don't think I may ever have a good grilled cheese sandwich again. Isn't that interesting? Because I don't think there's like these really common things I think I'm never going to see again. Like, I'm not going to see Van Halen in concert ever again. I've done it once. I'm good. I don't ever need to do it again. But there's this part of me that says, but I will get to Mars and I will encounter life there. Isn't that weird?
Wait till you get to that Van Halen concert on Mars.
who will be the singer by then? It won't be, I don't even know who it is now.
It'll be Elon Musk. No, I don't know. Yeah, it's funny. The conventional wisdom is that the human race is negative and arrogant. But at the same time, we seem to have this boundless optimism about space and about aliens. And I mean, I know that even if Hawking is wrong about contacting, he's probably right about not answering the phone. He's probably right that it is more likely that it is a dangerous alien, or at least something like in The Story of Your Life by Ted Chiang, that would hurt us accidentally because we don't understand it.
Right.
But I still want to meet the aliens. I don't know.
Yeah, me too.
I would think, like, if we were, you know, if we went somewhere, I think we would probably be a little bit more civil if we ran into aliens. But if we were here and it was our land and they came down here, they might look at us like, you know, this weak species and just be like, well, there's a bunch of Americans or a bunch of people, you know, in the world, and we're just going to take these suckers right over and take their resources and, you know, just kind of farm them, and that's what it is, because it's just easier that
way.
I guess it's whoever races to get there first, whoever meets who first.
Well, you're just and you're describing, I mean, it's funny because we're both optimistic and hopeful the way Tom said, and right. We are also, then we start thinking, oh yeah, but what if, and the what ifs are like, what if they've got a giant space laser that takes the entire Earth core out in one shot, or what if they assimilate us and take our bodies but put worms in us and we become aliens ourselves, or, you know, we go all sci-fi on what could happen. And I don't know why we're that way. We're weird. Like, we have this survival instinct, yet we want to go to places that we should, and we have no business going. And
because we're curious. It's a weird balance, right? Because I'm like, oh, we could learn so much, but you know, then lasers. So
yeah. Right.
I mean, and when you put it that way, it makes perfect sense, because that's why humans rose to the top of the food chain. Was we were wary enough to stay away from the lions, but curious enough to keep expanding our footprint.
Yeah, and now we control the lions.
Or do we?
Hadn't thought about that.
I don't know. I've got some theories about the secret lion cabal, but we can hold those for later.
All right.
The Philadelphia 76ers, which is a basketball team, purchased a pro esports competitor, Dignitas, and a League of Legends team, Apex. Dignitas has a roster of roughly 24 gamers competing in Counter-Strike, Overwatch, Heroes of the Storm, and Smite. And as part of the deal, they will merge Apex into Dignitas to make a super team. Meanwhile, in related news, Team Liquid has sold a controlling interest to Peter Guber and Ted Leonsis, and formed the esports ownership group Axiomatic, where they capitalize the X, not the A.
Of course.
It's different. Yeah. Leonsis is the majority owner of several professional sports teams, the Washington Capitals in hockey, the Washington Wizards in basketball, and the Washington Mystics in WNBA basketball. So sports folks coming into esports, are they carpetbaggers, Scott?
No. Here's I actually see this as a very optimistic move, because one of the big hangups in the world of esports, or competitive gaming, or whatever term we're using these days, is that there's not a way to create a groundswell of support for teams that is kind of local. In other words, if you live in Wisconsin, there's a big chance you're going to be a Green Bay fan. If you live in San Francisco, you're going to really back the Giants or whatever.
Cleveland Browns,
sure. If you live in Cleveland, sure. You're going to go for whatever. So those things happen in real sports, and it's great because you have a big bunch of fans that follow you around and root for you and travel to your games and go to all your home games, and you end up with a fan base that helps not only bolster the team and wants them to do well, but also helps pay the bills. It's, you know, concessions and tickets and everything else. Esports doesn't have this. They have this kind of weird hodgepodge of bunch of different games owned by various companies. Some companies own multiple games, like Blizzard, for example, that are all competing in the esports arena. And there's no way to really do it. It's just kind of a big hodgepodge of people that go to Twitch sometimes, and maybe they catch a game or two there, or a match or two there, or watch a VOD later, or see something on YouTube. And it's just all kind of spread out and scattered. So my thinking is, they get an organization like the 76ers, which, by the way, aren't doing that great basketball-wise, but they have a long history of knowing how to run an organization. They have the wherewithal and the infrastructure to do that. And they can start to experiment. They can see what this is capable of. And I'm not saying it's just going to be, oh, well, it'll be just Philadelphia fans. I just mean they've got the organizational skills to figure out how to deal with the who's our fans and who aren't, or how big can this be, or how can team ownerships actually work? Maybe the model is like professional sports today, and the esports world just needs to adhere to that. Because right now, I mean, it is literally all over the place. It's spaghetti on the wall, and nobody's sure what's going to stick. So to me, this is like a little bit of a grounding of the sports. It also says, yo, this is a thing people are taking serious on the other side of things. This is mainstream, taking something that was a bit underground as a little more seriously now. So I obviously have a ton of thoughts on this, and I don't want to go on too long, but I believe that this is actually a move in the right direction. Amy, do you have any thoughts on the future or current state of esports, and whether or not a professional NBA team can turn things around?
I admit that I am not much of a sports person in either on the field or in video games. So most of that was Greek to me. But
that's all good. It's good Greek.
I do find the part interesting where there's potential to get this sort of not as well known thing into the public. And that's, I think people sometimes, I feel like geekdom sometimes gets really nervous about that. But I think the more people you bring in, you get to share your excitement with more with others.
Yeah, we'd like to have
a wider network.
We'd like to have our private little nerd townhouse going on with all our little ideas that we think are cool and exclusive to us. But it's easy to forget in 2016, most of what we thought was kind of our little private club in the last 10 years is now just about as mainstream as it can get, if you count all the cons that are cropping up and the mainstreamification of those cons and conventions. And like, I agree with you 100%. And I think we should embrace it. Like, I feel like it's a chance to take it to people who don't know about it. Like, maybe even you could turn on ESPN3 one day and boom, Counter-Strike playoffs are happening. And you're like, whoa, this is as good as any sports I've been watching, which is kind of how I feel about it. I really, really enjoy esports. But how's anyone going to ever know if it doesn't bleed to the other side? Any thoughts, Carrie, on that?
I think that, you know, it's definitely a good thing to kind of like ride on the coattails of something, you know, like this, especially, you know, in the national view like this. You know, esports is, you know, getting out there. They've only been out for a few years or whatever since, you know, they started. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when it first started, yeah, like you said, it's a bunch of like, you know, geeks hanging out and stuff. But now you've got, you know, you got grandmas playing, you know, Call of Duty with their grandsons and stuff. So, I mean, there is a niche for this. And I mean, I don't see what the difference is at this point, sitting down and watching a basketball game with dad than sitting down and watching, you know, like you said, Counter-Strike and hanging out with the family and just like watching, you know, those things or the Hearthstone or, sure. or whatever it is that anybody's
betting
interested in.
Betting on the
in.
Horses or betting on CSGO. Right. It's all the same.
Yeah, what's the difference? It's both
there really
illegal
is
and
no difference.
Yeah, dangerous. So Tom and I mean, we've been to BlizzCon a couple times together. Like that's just, this stuff's genuinely exciting. Like it's a real... I mean, it feels like you're in a sport. The casters sound like sports casters. The color guys sound like color guys.
And that's the thing is this is making the transition. This is a huge milestone for esports in two ways. One is you forget that hockey, basketball, American football, they were all considered BS sports that no one in their right mind would go to because baseball was the sport. Yeah. And even baseball in the 1800s was like this weird thing that the people did in the hills above New York City, right? All sports developed from something that a group of odd people did that eventually caught on. And one of the things that makes a sport become mainstream is when the previous sports owners of the mainstream sports start to take an interest. And the big reason why that's a milestone is because they realize it's worth it, that there's money to be made. And if there's money to be made, that's because it's got sustained interest and it's got a fan base that's loyal and it's going to keep growing. And that's what this says.
Yep. You start getting noticed by Coke and IBM and Intel and the big advertisers that show up on Super Bowl day and they start getting their muscle behind esports. And before you know it, it's everywhere.
JJ.
I'm just glad that there's a venue for it now, you know, mm-hmm. that you can start to find this stuff everywhere. And it's, I don't know, it's a lot more fun for people like me that, you know, I'm not really a big sports fan. So, I mean, I like that there's more variety out there. So
sure.
It's a good thing.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tom, take your show back.
More.
The moment's gone. Let's just go. Yeah. JJ Abrams told IGN that films based on Portal and Half-Life are, quote, still very much in development, as they have been since 2013. He said, we have a meeting coming up next week with Valve. We're very active, and I'm hoping that there will be a Portal announcement very soon.
So I have a theory about video game movies and why they get delayed. Every time...
They've been terrible.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Here's the problem, though. You're totally right, but there'll be a bad one, and then everyone will get skittish and back off. And then something will come along like... Prince of Persia was all right, and it made money. So people are like, oh,
something come along that approaches 50% on Rotten.
Right, exactly. And so fans, you know, go enough to make money, get their money back, and so they say, oh, well, maybe we can do this again, and they'll come out with Max Payne, which was utter garbage, and then everyone backs off and goes, whoa, maybe video games aren't ready for prime time, and it just keeps going back and forth. And unfortunately, even though I kind of enjoyed it, the World of Warcraft movie, that came out in April. In the States anyway, tanked, did terribly, and the reviewers hated it. It was in the low 20s on Rotten Tomatoes. I think the fans fared a little bit better. I know I did, but I'm biased, so it probably helped. Plus, I saw it with friends, and there were a lot of reasons why to like it from my perspective, but I think people are now skittish again, and that was a big budget thing. That was a lot of, you know, ILM effects and $150 million budget and not a cheap undertaking by any stretch. So I'll bet that this Portal movie and the Half-Life movie have been on a roller coaster of, yes, we're greenlighting it to, oop, we better hold off. Yes, we'll greenlight it. Oop, we better hold off. Because I don't think anybody in the movie business is comfortable or knowledgeable enough to know when the bet is the right one to take. And these are two really cool properties that you could do really neat things with. But I'll bet there are people in suits who are like, I don't know, man. Warcraft tanked. That should have been the one. That should have been our great watermark, the one time where everything just totally rocked.
So hold on, Scott. What you're saying is you've got a franchise that people want to work but are sorely afraid will not work. And so you're calling in J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, I guess I am. Yeah, that's a really good point. So can he do it? Is he our guy? Because he, you know, made Star Wars and Star Trek and lots of good movies and stuff. Can he spearhead this and finally make it happen?
I think he's certainly done such a variety of things on both the film. I'm constantly amazed at the stuff his name's attached to. I mean, Westworld, for example, I keep forgetting it's him. So I think his skill set and his company's skill set is broad enough and Maybe, do you think they're waiting at all to kind of see what happens? Because Assassin's Creed movie is a thing that's coming up, right?
Oh, yeah.
That
that's
is
the
a thing.
Share.
Oh, you're right.
Yep.
Yep. Forgot about
a couple
that.
Months or a month or something. Actually, I have high hopes for that, but I don't know. I mean, just because there's a really good actor in it doesn't really mean anything, I suppose. So we'll have to see. Carrie, how are your hopes for the future of video game movies?
Well, Portal's kind of a big thing. My boyfriend like actually has like a tattoo on his arm about Portal. So, I mean, we're just hoping that if it comes out, you know, isn't another failure like a lot of these other movies have been in the past. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think that J.J. Abrams is if you're going to attach yourself and try to like flip the genre around a little bit, mm-hmm. pull out the big gun. Why not? You know, yeah. That's great. So I think that if there's someone that's going to pull off a movie, this could be it. You know, I mean, just I'll tell you this, that I was never okay. Don't everybody kill me right now. Cause what I'm about to say, but I was never like a Star Trek fan or anything like that until the new Star Treks came out and I watched them like, you know, one right after. And I was so excited to see the next one. I was like, oh my God, these are amazing. You know, lens flare here and there, but you know, I loved the actual movie. So sure. I think JJ absolutely has the ability to pull it off. I'm just praying it's Portal. So I'm like, don't screw this one up, man.
Well, I actually have a theory, Tom, because you and yeah. I, so we have a mutual friend in Dan Trachtenberg. For those that don't remember, he was on the Totally Rad Show and then was doing some commercial work and had ideas of being a director in Hollywood. He made a fan film about Portal, a Portal fan film, and I forgot the actual name of it, but it's incredible. And if you haven't seen it, absolutely go to YouTube and find this thing. It is idea enough that you could take Portal someplace special. Well, what happened with that Portal movie or that short film? It made a huge splash on YouTube, tons of views. J.J. Abrams himself notices it. And through his production company, gets Trachtenberg hired to helm the Cloverfield Lane movie that came out last year.
10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah, Cloverfield Lane, which did really well. And again, both critically and did well in theaters. I think secretly what's happening here is the reason they're maybe ramping this up is if he's going to do it and if his production company Bad Robot's involved, he'll get Trachtenberg to do it because he's already got this hand at it. He understands the game. He's also a really good director. Like, it's perfect. It's a perfect storm. So I'm predicting it now. If the movie gets greenlit, and if Abrams pushes it to be greenlit and it gets greenlit, Dan Trachtenberg, director. You watch.
I think that's a pretty good prediction. I think what they're doing, what Abrams is good at is saying, here's what makes a good story, and here's what the fans want, and let me try to find where those cross.
Yeah.
So I'm going to turn Star Trek into an action movie because that makes a really good story, but I'm going to throw Leonard Nimoy in there because, you know, that's what fans want, and I'm going to pull it off. The Force Awakens is a high wire balancing act of exactly that sort of thing. So I think that's probably what he's doing is waiting to find, like, what is the story? Like, I think you're probably right, Scott. He's probably got the director in his pocket. Mm-hmm. He's just like, what is the story? The story has to be right. Because that is always the problem with video game movies is they don't know how to take what's special about the video game story and turn it into a movie story.
Yeah, or at the very least take sometimes the rickety version of what's the video game story, which isn't all that, you know, they're not always that deep, but take that and then put some imagination into it so that you can expand on that universe in a way that's meaningful but still serves the fans of the game. And Portal's probably the best example of this, given the fact that Portal is just this big... Well, you and I used to play co-op Portal. That is one big, weird world with a lot of stuff that isn't explained. So what better than somebody could come in and say, I know what the tone of this needs to be. Now let's just fill in all this rad space with some cool ideas. Hopefully they have the right balance and it works out. I'm excited.
All right. Finally, CW's superhero lineup returns to air starting Tuesday with The Flash, Arrow on Wednesday, Supergirl the following Monday, and Legends of Tomorrow the following Thursday. Supergirl, if you remember, moved from CBS this season, allowing for more cooperation between the shows, which, among other things, means a two-part Supergirl-Flash musical crossover event where the former stars of Glee get to sing together again.
Wait, were they all on Glee at some point? They were, weren't they?
Supergirl and Flash were, yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, I don't hate Glee as much as I used to then, because I actually kind of like both these shows. All right, a musical. Fine, whatever. I've seen weirder things on TV. Amy, do you got to cover this for the Nerdist or anything?
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know if you guys realize I wrote that article. On
yes,
Steady.
I did. Okay. I don't know. Maybe Scott did. I should have
I did not know. I had no idea. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's Amy's Collider.com article.
Okay.
So I think the Flash and Supergirl, if they're going to do with any two shows, they're just such joyful, kind of ridiculous, fun shows that they could pull it off. Mm. And I mean, look at Buffy, like that musical episode. If you have the right people working on it, it can just be not only neat and different, but actually meaningful and drive the plot too. And they already have, what's the character that's in the DC versus it Music Meister?
Oh, right. Yeah.
I think so. They have characters that could come in and they can make it work without it seeming totally, you know, out of place.
Especially DC. They have the worst characters, some of the worst villains of all time. They're so bad. Like the Quilt or whatever he's called, or Quilt Maker. He's like a guy with a quilted suit and it's just all quilted up and he makes quilts or something. It's terrible. And the calendar guy that just makes like marks off calendar days, and like they have bad ideas over there. So but they've done it. You know, like, you know, somehow TV has worked this out and DC continues to just thrive there as opposed to their films. Not so much. By the way, real quick, this article on Collider, that's way back in May that you put up, Gilmore Girls, A Newbie's Guide to the Most Essential Episodes. We use that in our house. I can't believe it. Like that, I didn't know it was you because my wife is doing like her third watching, and I was like, I'm not watching that whole thing. When she goes to college, it kind of sucks. So I'd like to just like get the essentials. I did some searching around, found this, used it as a guide, and here we are talking to you.
Oh, yes.
That's so exciting. Funny. I had no idea.
That somebody actually read that. I love it.
Yeah, I had no idea. Anyway, go check it out. It was back in May. If you click on Amy's name on Collider, you'll see it. Carrie,
I'm actually looking forward to all of these shows. And I had thought I might stop watching Legends of Tomorrow, but finding out that they're going to bring Justice Society of America in World War II era into this is interesting to me. And it makes me think this is going to be more of a time travel series than it was. They had a few good time travel eps last season, but it was kind of a rocky season.
Yeah. I haven't actually seen that season at all yet. And I felt like I don't know enough about that part of the DC universe to go for it and really feel like I'm in it. But I'll wait for you or someone else to tell me that it was worth
it. I didn't know any of those people from the DC universe. And I still enjoyed some of the parts. I mean, it's like Arrow. I was never an Arrow reader. I never was a Green Arrow reader, but they bring some of that Batman gestalt and they started to do a really good job. And they made this beautiful transition from saying, hey, fans of Gossip Girl, here's a superhero show you might like, to being a like full on unapologetic superhero show. It was a good, elegant move.
Yeah, it took them about 8 episodes, but they got there. And then Flash is pretty awesome and Flash is kind of goofy. So I'm glad they did that too. Carrie, are you fans of these shows on the CW?
So I started with Arrow, of course, got through season 1, 2. I think we stopped on season 3 because I just couldn't buy it anymore. I was just like, I can't. I'm like, he's got an arrow. That dude's got like, you know, a machine gun just like
he's
coming at his
good,
face.
Carrie.
I can't buy it. It takes me out of that whole universe,
he's
you know?
Queen. So
I was like, well, it's not even that. It's what is it? A Black Canary. I can't deal with Black Canary on any level. I try so hard. I can't. She comes out. She just starts screaming. It reminds me of like, you know, an ex-mother-in-law. I just can't do it anymore. So wow. I had to stop watching Arrow, even though, I mean, I enjoyed it for a while, but I always kind of felt it was kind of cheesy. But Flash, we do watch. We're a little bit behind, and that's okay if there's spoilers. I don't care. I'm not a big, like, oh, don't spoil it, you know?
He does a lot of running really fast, if that's
yeah,
spoils. I don't know.
Yeah, I heard. Yeah. But we're a little bit behind on it, but I do love how he's portrayed in this. I'm actually kind of upset that he's not playing in the movie.
Yeah.
I don't understand why they wouldn't.
Well,
like,
the description or the comments have been, hey, these are separate universes, just like in the comics we have, you know, Universe 69 and Universe 70, and they're totally different.
Also, there are separate universes of the salary we're willing to pay people, and movie people get paid more.
Honest about it. So I started watching Legends of Tomorrow, but we might pick it up again because what you're saying, it got better because in the beginning, the first like two or three episodes, I'm like, oh yeah. No, it's more of this crap.
I'm just glad somebody like the CW is taking chances on this stuff because they're weird and hard and they somehow are pulling it off and they're highly rated and they are not canceling them outright like other networks might. In fact, they're taking one on that was canceled by a regular network with Supergirl. So, long live the DC Universe on CW. Well,
I think it takes time to get a good character down right. Yeah. And once they bagged one, I think Flash is pretty much the one that's going to break them out. I think, you know, if they can kind of play off of that a little bit, that's going to be the one that's going to be their, you know, their spearhead that can just kind of pull them through. So,
and I'll take all the pretty people. Like if they all have to be beautiful people, fine. It's fine. It's okay.
We'll just look at them. It'll just, we'll have to suffer.
That's a good point. Great stories today. And part of the reason we have such great stories is because of our friends who listen to the show, who all go to currentgeek.reddit.com and submit them. Tom, who gave us some stories today?
Well, yeah, I mean, I just took the one that Amy actually wrote herself that's in there. But we also got stories from Ego Slam, Code Wow, JM Bean, and Number One Schmuck. You're the number one schmuck forever in our hearts.
Yeah.
Those are the folks who submitted stories on our subreddit we use this week. Be the person next week, currentgeek.reddit.com.
Real quick, let's talk about what our guests are up to these days. Carrie, you talked a little bit about the trivia show that you do, the Trivia Geek Show. I've been on it. Tom's been on it. A bunch of Frog Panthers have been on it. But you got a lot of stuff going on. Tell us a little bit more about what you do and where you're coming from.
Sure. Well, we have a company. It's BlazingCaribouStudios.com. You can head out there. We're putting together a bunch of shows, and we have a lot of them out right now. We have Geek Cinema Society, which is a great show about shows that really should be in your geek pocket. And if you haven't seen them, what they do is they interview somebody and that hasn't seen the movie and they get their first take on it. And they've done things like Superman, and I was on for Fury Road. And you can check that episode out, Scott.
I love Fury Road.
Review it right up.
I don't think he's that interested in that movie.
You know, I never talk about it. I never bring this up, but it is my favorite movie of the last decade. But I never bring it up. I never talk about it. You know?
I'm glad. But I actually mentioned you in that. You might want to click on that episode.
Right.
We have some other great shows too. We have I'd App That. We have Black Mirror Reflections. We have a new show coming out, which I'm so excited about. It's called Sketching Comedy. And Phil Rude is the star of that one, where he basically does a drawing while we go through and play some, you know, some comedy skits and stuff like that. It's along with Fletcher Bumpus and Matthew Peterson from Major Spoilers. So going to be really great.
Yeah.
But Trivia Geeks is great. That's pretty much our flagship show. You guys have been on it. We have a new season coming out October 26th. We're going to introduce an app to play along. We have new logos. We have new hosts. We have new games. We have a new whole look to the whole feel of it. So nice. We're hoping to get some people back. And we were also invited to do a little bit of nerdtacularing during a special during the trivia part. So there might be some playful things going on at that time.
I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be great.
How did you get into all of this, Carrie? What sucked you into the podcast universe?
It started off with Frog Pants and all of that kind of thing. You know, I was actually an avid WoW player myself. And I was a guild leader forever, and I was looking for something more. And to like talk to my, you know, my friends about, you know, and kind of lead them through. And I found this like silly little podcast on, you know, on another channel, and it was Scott talking about Warcraft. And I was like, what is this? The Instance. And so I really started, you know, started to understand the podcasting idea. And I've done improv. I'm a retired stand-up comedian. So there's always been that love to kind of put myself and my face out there. I was asked to kind of give a, you know, somebody was looking for a host for this Trivia Geek show. And I was just like, okay. And I put out an audition tape and he's like, oh, we got to have you. And I was like, oh, cool. So it just kind of started with that. And from that, kind of just spun over the last couple of years. So yes, this is where I am now.
Praise to Warcraft for all of the connections we make through it.
Yeah, see that? So there's some incestuous way we're still connected there, Scott.
Dark lady, watch over you.
That's right. At the end of today's podcast, we'll find out more about where people can go on the web to find you. Amy, what are you doing these days? I absolutely love what I'm reading of your work and also discovering that I've read your work before and didn't know it. Tell us more about what you got going on.
Thank you. Right now I am knee deep into Luke Cage that dropped on Netflix last night, and I'm recapping it for Nerdist. So I've been in I got 7 screeners in advance. So I finished those. So now I'm in a binge write cycle until it's done.
Oh man.
And it is excellent.
So thank you. Thank you extra for taking time out of that to talk to us today.
Yeah. I feel like now the clock is ticking. Now we gotta hurry.
I guess that point where you type, I don't know if you guys have this, when you write and you realize you go to spell check and you're like, I made that many typos. Like, it's clearly time for me to stop looking at my computer.
Oh man. Yeah, I've been there before. That's awesome. I was going to ask you, is there a challenge in trying to, what's the word I'm looking for? Because the way these seasons drop, on other shows, you can do these recaps, unless they send you screeners with 4 episodes at a time or something. You can watch Game of Thrones and then do a piece, and then you got a week to kind of digest what you saw and what you think. When it's all dropped at once, is that harder to do or easier to do?
It's a lot harder because you get that... you don't get the story's still playing out slowly, but you're watching it so fast. And on one hand, you think watching them in succession like that would help you remember what just happened, but instead everything bleeds together. So it involves, for me at least, a lot more taking notes. So I remember kind of, oh, this plot happened here. So by the time we get to this point with this character, it makes sense.
Yeah. And do you dream in it? Do you see Luke Cage in your dreams now? Because it's just all you've seen for so many hours?
Yes, and I'm okay with that because my culture is one handsome man.
If you're going to have to dream about somebody,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Don't dream of electric sheep. Dream of that guy.
I'm knee deep in Luke Cage, having a lot of fun with that, starting to gear up on StarWars.com for some Rogue One material. Mm-hmm. And and TV seasons back with CW coming back. I also cover Supergirl for DCComics.com. So.
Wow.
It's like my summer vacation is over.
Yeah.
I mean, vacation in air quotes, but
yeah, yeah.
You have your work cut out for you, man.
We cover a lot of these shows on another show I do called Cord Killers, and my co-host and I, Brian, will joke about like, well, we have to work and watch shows. And it is a blessing and a curse. Cause on the one hand you're like, dude, this is my job, is sitting here watching Game of Thrones, but you also can't just watch it. You have to watch it with that eye.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm glad people don't always understand that, because a lot of you're watching TV for work, like stop complaining. I'm like, I'm not complaining, but it's not the same.
Yeah, it's very different.
I sit down and watch it for fun.
Yeah, I have to do, when I do video game covers, same thing. I have to play like a player, but I also sometimes have to play something that maybe isn't that great, but I need to see because I need to talk about it or whatever. And I'm sure that's true of like a show you've seen that's bad. Of all of these, final question, of all of these things that you're covering that Netflix has done, so all of the sort of Defender shows and eventually the Defenders themselves when they all get together. Do you feel like it's all been very consistent through Daredevil, Jessica Jones, now Luke Cage? Any of it stand out as, oh, that was excellent, the rest of this is just okay? Like, kind of what's your overall up to this point?
It's interesting that it's been consistent both in, I think, in their successes and failures. One of the failures being that they kind of have some bloat happening. Those episodes just have, they have that 13 episodes to fill up. And sometimes it feels like they're struggling to get there. Mm. And they've all excelled so far in their villains and building more compelling villains than any of the Marvel films have. But I think Jessica Jones for me, especially stands out as far as storytelling and character development.
Yeah. I loved that one. I really, really liked it. I still haven't seen season 2 of Daredevil. So if that, I don't know, Jessica Jones made me want to see Luke Cage more than anything, but I haven't started that either. So I will now rely on your synopses to get to the next level. Thank you both again. At the end of the show, we'll let you guys give out some links and stuff like that. Tom, before we do the pop quiz, a quick reminder, folks at home, if you want to support the show, you're scratching your head going, I don't know how to do it. Well, we've told you how before, and we're going to tell you how again. It's in a really cool way to do it, because you're going to get custom artwork, custom items. I've got right here my iPhone. Well, it's actually work with any USB charger, but I've got a portable charger that says Current Geek on it. Charge that thing up, and any phone or device that needs charging on the go while you're on a plane or whatever, you've got that little thing in there. That came in a box. We have had mugs in the boxes, shot glasses in the boxes. That was one of my favorites. Stickers, art, calendars, all kinds of cool stuff. If you're used to getting kind of those monthly crates, you have the right idea. It's just hours and hours alone. You can't get this anywhere else, and you can get it at frogpants.cratejoy.com. That's, again, frogpants.cratejoy.com.
Get a crate, full of joy, support the show.
Yep, all that joy and more. Time for the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
All right, that music means one thing, and that is Herb Albert is amazing, but also the second thing it means is it's time for the pop quiz. This is where our guests get asked questions in areas of their expertise. They answer the best way they can. Tom keeps score the entire time. When an answer is right, you'll hear this. When it's wrong, you'll hear this. And we're going to start with Amy, it looks like. Amy,
oh boy.
Are you ready for your questions?
Yes.
we love this part of the show. All right, here's your first question. By the way, your topic is Princess Leia trivia. All right?
Okay.
As submitted to us by, this was Hammond thought this would be a good topic for you. And questions by Iceworm. Big thanks to both of them. Here's your first question of five. What is the name of Princess Leia's ship that gets captured at the beginning of Episode 4, A New Hope?
Tantive 4.
Oh, my goodness.
Or Tantive 4.
Yeah, I think either is acceptable.
Okay, so 4 points for proper pronunciation.
Whoa, look at that. All right, wow. See, this is how this works. If you do well.
Also because it's Tantive 4.
Yeah, very, very well done. what is the name of Leia's adoptive mother?
Breha.
Oh, man. Nailed it. You know the last name just for fun?
Morgana.
Very, very well done. I don't know. I'm not trying to cheat
Scott
here,
loses
but...
a point for thinking that was difficult.
Like that it was hard? Okay. Next one. Leia used the armor of what bounty hunter to infiltrate Jabba's palace and rescue Han Solo?
Boosh or Boush? That one I'm not sure how to pronounce.
Correct again. Man, I'm going to go with
Boosh.
All
right. Half point for uncertainty, but you still get the point.
For half a second, you know that Bosch show on Amazon?
Yes, for
a hot minute back when it first premiered, I thought, are you serious? We're getting a
all
bounty
right,
hunter?
Has that mashup not been made yet? Because it must.
It needs to. I really did. Those books are good too. Anyway, what were the names of Leia's children before the expanded universe was removed?
Jaina and Jason.
And there's a third. You know the third?
Oh, I don't know the third.
Oh, it's so close.
Was there a Cade? No, that was his great. No, I don't know.
The answer is so you're right on Jaina. Jason. Yeah. And Jason spelled J-E-C-E-N. And Anakin. They had an Anakin.
I didn't know they had an Anakin.
Well, according to this, they did.
Two-thirds of a point, then.
Well done. Final question. How old is Princess Leia in the beginning of A New Hope?
Oh, geez. I think 19.
You are correct. 19 is the number. 19. Remember that song? Great song. Anyway, well done. 19 is the answer. You did really well.
You did really well. Yeah. Congratulations for winning this game.
Carrie, no.
I was so nervous about it, Hammond. I think they went easy on it, which I appreciate.
Well, Carrie.
Those were mid to high level for the difficulty we have. So
yeah.
I hope you put the low fruit for me because, oh boy.
I know a lot of people, including me, who consider themselves big Star Wars fans that wouldn't have gotten a bunch of those right. So
Leia's mom, with no hesitation, was impressive.
Yeah, I'm impressed. Carrie, no pressure. This is going to be no problem for you because it's hair metal band trivia.
Yeah.
Hair metal bands.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
What?
All right, question number one. Again, this
is going to kill him.
Yeah,
what?
You can take this out on Hammond. It's fine.
All right. Okay.
I love that we have a scapegoat that we can blame. I love
this.
Isn't
it awesome?
What album by Winger contains the song 17?
Mike. Winger?
Winger. They were huge.
I have to know the album name?
Yeah.
I could have probably even have gotten the name of the band. I don't know. Let's call it 17 and happy to be alive.
Incorrect. The answer is Winger. It is a self-titled album, Winger.
Of course it is.
So if we had told you the album, you would have known the band, actually, if it would have worked that way. All right. What year was Motley Crue formed?
Let's see.
Somehow I know this, but I don't know why I know it.
Motley Crue. I think my brother started listening to that stuff in like, let's see, 1984.
1981 is the correct answer. 81.
But she was correct that her brother began listening to Motley Crue in 1984 and therefore earns a point.
All right. Got a point anyway. Here we go. In the film Hot Tub Time Machine, one of the characters goes to a concert featuring what hair metal band?
God.
I also know this for no reason. I haven't even seen that movie and I knew this one. I don't know how.
Oh my God. I haven't seen the movie either. Let's see. What's a good band from back in that time? It's a hair band, Poison.
Oh my gosh. Hold on. That is correct.
You also get the 3-point lucky guess bonus.
Yeah. Well done. Jeez, 4 points for that one. All right. What album by Rat? I loved Rat. That's R-A-T-T.
Lay it down, Scott.
Featured, the song is Round and Round, but I'm not going to sing it. What album featured the song Round and Round? Probably their biggest hit.
I could have said Round and Round if that was the question, but the name of the album, eh? Ratatouille.
That is to say, incorrect. The answer is Out of the Cellar, which is very...
Well, but she gets a half point for making a rat sound while thinking, and a half point pun bonus. Yeah. So there you go.
Nicely done. Final question. Here's where it all comes down. What year did Warrant release Cherry Pie? It's the worst album.
And oh my God.
Warrant was the worst hair band. So I hate them. But anyway, yes. So Warrant.
And for bonus points, what was the name of the music director at the radio station I worked at who quit because we added Warrant's Cherry Pie to the playlist?
Okay. So the first answer is 1983.
You are. And keep going.
His name is Ken.
His name is Ken?
Yeah.
All right. So is it 83? Nope. 1990. This is much later.
Mark.
They were one of the last bastions of hair bands.
They called him Ken behind your back. You didn't know that.
Half point for knowing that we secretly called him Ken.
Only behind his back. All right. That is it for the questions. Let's see how they did. Tom kept score. How did they do?
All right, out of a total of 5 questions, Carrie ended up with 6.5 points and Amy 7.17777 repeating.
Eked it out. Way to go, Amy. Nicely done. Those are actually pretty good scores considering. Well done, everybody. So this for a second. Always makes me happy. This part of the show is where we predict things.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
As I often say, we used to have a show called Forecast, Tom and I. Now we've made it into a segment, and that segment's all about predicting the future in technology, entertainment, and the like. I have a prediction here, and I'm going to read it to you. This is mine. You guys can laugh at it all you want. I have no shame, okay?
You really do love that movie.
I really do. One day, that's not a question. One day, we will be rid of having to drink water to survive, is my thinking. And we will have other ways to convert oxygen and hydrogen that is already in the atmosphere into something we can receive via some sort of like little receptor port or some kind of like plate in the back of our head that just sort of absorbs it.
Water world will be solved.
Exactly. No more water. We always talk about like one of the great bastions of both Forecast and then this segment has been people predicting water wars. That one day we're all going to fight over the water that's left and most of it will be contaminated and only the 1% can afford the water sort of thing. I think this is the way you solve it. We all get a little implant on our ears or something that just takes it in while they're out walking around. A little oxygen here, a little hydrogen there, just traces of it. You don't need much. Converts it to what you need. I don't think that's that crazy. Discuss.
I'm on board because I hate drinking water. So I would rather it just be taken care of without me having to think of it.
That flavorless, horrible liquid that you have to, you're forcing yourself to drink, you wouldn't have to do it anymore. Or put... you wouldn't have to put anything else in it to make it better, Tom's coffee. Like you could just not have to worry about it. You could have a meal and they say, well, I don't have to bring water. We'd have no more shortages. Californians, water your lawns again. It's fine. Go for it, Tom. You can... Water your lawn once more.
Oh, because we're just all taking the water. What about the almonds, though? Because that's what's really using up all the water.
That's a good point. Almonds are sucking it all up. Yep.
I actually enjoy water. I have no problem drinking water, but I guess I'm attracted to the idea of not having to worry about it. I've said this with food. Like, I want the food cube where I can just decide to eat a nice meal when I want to, but I don't have to think about it. I don't have to be on a schedule for it. Mm-hmm. So it'd be nice to be like, yeah, I've got the patch on. I can have a nice refreshing glass of water after a run, maybe, because it just tastes good, but I don't have to. I don't have to keep filling it. I sleep through the night without waking up thirsty like you do sometimes. Some good advantages.
Maybe you could store it and it would be time release. So, and I'm
like
all for the
camel.
And I'm all for the meal thing too, by the way. Like a camel. Give us a couple of humps. That's fine.
Yeah, the kids these days with their camel humps. Yeah. I don't get it.
Yeah, they're humpty humps. The way I look at it is, if I only have to just eat a little cube in the morning that just time releases for the three meals a day, or whenever I'm hungry, it just stimulates and does it or whatever. Man, how much easier would life be? I know we'd miss out on lunches together, and there'd be a few social reasons why this would be weird, but you're not hungry anymore. People who are genuinely hungry don't have to be hungry anymore. And people who may want to control their eating better can do that so much simpler if we just aren't hungry all the time.
What
if
they never have to apologize to people for being hangry.
That's right. Are you one of those? My daughter's a hangry eater. She gets real grumpy if she doesn't get her calories by a certain time of day. So I've lived with a hangry person. I know what's up.
Okay, it would be nice to not have to count those calories anymore either. It's just you know, this cube has got this many in it,
that's
and
it.
I'm good to go. But man, I would miss cake.
What if though
I'm not gonna lie.
We had food and drink that had no calories and was only taste.
Oh,
like
wow.
This is stuff that's just gonna, that's, you know, I hate to.
And fat, like no fat either. Too.
I hate to be gross, but it's just gonna pass through you. It's non-metabolizable. Okay. And the reason we don't invent that now is you actually need nutrition. But if we solve that with the food cube and the water patch,
yep,
we can just eat empty fake food.
I'm in.
Yes.
I'm in. No, that's the whole problem.
All in for that.
It's my whole problem. I'm going out tonight. After this, I'm going to see a movie, that offshore drilling disaster thing, Tom. I was thinking of
with Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
Because I know you love the disaster movie, so
I do.
That's my thinking. So I'm going to see that, and then we're going to eat, and we're going to go to this wings place. And what I want is a big bowl of nasty fried wings. What I'm going to get is some kind of salad, because the wings are bad for me. If you're telling me I can get a big bowl of those and there are no repercussions, and I had my water cube.
Actually be chicken wings, right? Because you got to make them out of some fake material that your body can't metabolize.
Right. It has to just like cotton candy. It has to sort of just disappear.
Like tofurkey, but not even tofu.
Yeah. Tofurkey's bad. If you had tofurkey, it's bad. It's really bad. Anyway.
I'm a fan of the dot dogs. They're not bad.
If you all at home have ideas for what you think the future holds, you can send those to us at currentgeek@gmail.com. Speaking of which, we have a quick email from Gavin, who wrote in and said this: I'm getting into my car after work, excited to listen to the ending of the latest Current Geek episode. They're predicting the future when I have an epiphany as I touch my burning hot steering wheel. In the future, we will have materials, including plastics and metals, that don't get hot in the sun and burn us. Maybe it's a coating on the material, or maybe it's the material itself. Discuss, he says. Sure, why not?
You can already do this.
Yeah, I was going to say, doesn't this exist?
It just doesn't make pretty steering wheels, I guess. I don't know. I don't know why they don't use materials that don't heat up.
Just make it like out of like a hot pad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or the space shuttle.
An oven mitt.
Mm-hmm. Discs, not using those for the space shuttle anymore. The heat shielding.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I've noticed if I keep a white phone on my chest while I'm out on a hammock in the sun, it doesn't heat up. And if I have the black phone there, it gets like a hot rock and won't even start. So part of the problem is people have black dashboards or dark dashboards or dark colored steering
wheels.
Yeah,
that absorb sun.
Yeah, you got to reflect it, man. I learned this in Colors 101 in high school. I didn't really have a class called Colors
101. You're an artist, Scott.
Yeah. Look how it's paying off. It's going great. Anyway, if you would like to send your own emails in, again, that email is currentgeek@gmail.com. Real quick, before we go, let's let our guests talk about where people can find them. Carrie, let's start with you. Where can people go to find more of your shows, more of your great stuff?
You can catch all of our shows on blazingcariboustudios.com. You can catch me on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Carrie Sims on Facebook. My handle on Twitter is Blinken Park. yeah, you can just kind of find me everywhere, but definitely hit the blazingcariboustudios.com. That will show all the shows that I'm in and everything like that. So
should have done a Linkin Park trivia for you. That would have probably.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm surprised you didn't, but that's cool.
You're gonna blame it's Hammond. Yeah. Blame Hammond. That's what I always say. Amy, tell us more about where your work can be found.
You can find my writing at Nerdist.com, StarWars.com. Those are my usual suspects. And I link everything from, mostly everything from Twitter. And I'm there at Amy_Geek. And also under that at Instagram. And I do a couple Star Wars podcasts called Full of Sith and Lattes with Leia.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm going to have to check that out. Tom, I'll listen to yours still, but I'm going to check theirs out too. Okay?
Yeah, man. Lattes with Leia sounds fantastic.
And enormous thank you to both of you for being here. You guys were awesome guests, and I hope we get to do this with you again. So thanks again for being here with us.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. It was great. Tom Merritt, anything going on in your world?
Just for people who might also be into the Daily Tech News Show, which is a show that's daily about tech news, if you don't know about it, we have a new, it's not new, but it's rejuvenated Facebook page. So facebook.com/Daily Tech News Show. Go check it out, like it, and you can get all of our episodes, the Daily Tech Headlines episodes, which are less than 10 minutes long, just giving you just the headlines that you need to know each day, and make comments with some other people. Andy Beach is in there making comments. So another place to go and hang out and talk tech.
Oh, Andy's always good for that stuff. For everything else, oh man, I got a million things going on, but find it all on my Twitter account. Scott Johnson is the account. I know what I was going to mention. The Rally Point show I do about esports, which is why I kind of went off on that earlier, because it's kind of on my mind, is moving to a live format on Monday nights, 7:30 p.m. Mountain Time. So if you like that show, we're going to start recording it live with live guests. We have people from Blizzard coming on, people from Riot, people from Valve, from everywhere, coming to talk about their various esports plans, including players, coaches, team owners. We got big, big plans. So check that out. More details at Rally Point over there at, what is it, rallypoint.gg. All part of the Bleacher Report thing. That's going to do it for us. Thank you guys all for being here. Once again, if you want to call us, leave us a voicemail, 801-471-0462. You can also send us those emails. We like those. currentgeek@gmail.com. We are Current Geek on Twitter, Ace to Tech for Tom, Scott Johnson for me, and currentgeek.com for everything else. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and our guests. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we review some recent patent cases for one of our favorite game developers, Activision Blizzard, to see how the Warcraft is going in the patent world for them. At the beginning of this month, two decisions came down from judges in patent disputes involving Activision Blizzard. In the first case, Activision is being sued, along with other defendants, for allegedly infringing 6 patents from a company called Acceleration Bay. The patents cover technology that interacts with broadcast channels to allow players to connect and communicate in certain ways for multiplayer gaming experiences. Acceleration Bay initially filed their lawsuit in Delaware, where Activision and the other defendants are incorporated. During a break in that first lawsuit, given by the Delaware court to fix defects in the initial complaint, Activision filed what is called a declaratory judgment action in California, trying to move the dispute over the patents and their validity to their own home jurisdiction. However, the California courts dismissed the case because Activision's incorporation in Delaware makes that a valid place for the company to have to defend this lawsuit. In the words of the court, Activision cannot have its cake by incorporating there and eat it too by forcing litigation against them out of Delaware to a more convenient home jurisdiction of California. These battles over where a case is litigated are very typical, and it may not make a difference depending on how the merits of this patent infringement claim come out in the future. Still, it's a minor loss for Activision. Better news came in the second case, where Blizzard is being sued with some other defendants for infringing a patent owned by Parallel Networks for game downloader software. Battle.net was specifically in the crosshairs as a possible infringement of patent claims covering a downloader program that reassigns which blocks of data the downloader receives based on a demand. However, this case did not even make it to a jury, as the Delaware judge in this case decided on summary judgment that no reasonable juror could find that Battle.net performs the claim method of operation. The reallocation of blocks of data in the Parallel Networks patent cannot be equated with reordering how content is downloaded based on a customer demand, which is how Battle.net works when multiple patches are available, according to this judge. It's a highly technical distinction, but it was sufficient to overcome this infringement case, at least until appeal. The bottom line is, large companies like Activision Blizzard are inevitably tied up in IP litigation at all times, and you inevitably win some and lose some in those battles. Even though these two decisions went opposite ways, a loss in a jurisdiction battle is much less important than a dismissal of the Parallel Networks infringement case. So all in all, September was a good month for Activision Blizzard in the legal landscape. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.